Welcome everyone to episode 202 of the Reds Unrestricted podcast. I'm your host David Comerford and I'm joined by Farrell Keeling as we discuss the Europa League, the return of Michael Edwards and the upcoming game against Manchester United in the FA Cup.
This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Plenty to get through in today's episode then, but the place to start is obviously last night's round of 16, second leg against Sparta Prague, where Liverpool won 6-1 on the night. They were actually 4-0 up by the 14th minute, and that's the quickest a team have been four goals up in a major European game since Chelsea in 1971. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the name of the team that they were playing. I think it might have been a French side, but obviously we're going back a long, long way there, 50 years or so. And it was also Liverpool's biggest margin of victory over two legs since 1981 when they played a Finnish team called OPS. So some history made yesterday. Darwin Nunez got things going. Bobby Clark scored before the television coverage had even fully resumed. Mohamed Salah then made it 3-0 by the 10th minute. Gakpo in the 14th. And genuinely at that stage, I was thinking I've never seen anything like this before. Things settled down a little bit then. Sparta Prague got one back before the break. Then Liverpool scored a couple more in the second half through Szoboszlai and Gakpo to make it 6 on the night and 11 on aggregate. So, Farrell, we won't dwell on this too much. I mean, the tie was over after the first leg and we've got other things to get to today. But what were your main takeaways from that game last night?
Yeah, no, comprehensive, really. Probably the most, at least certainly up there, one of the most comprehensive victories you'll see from a Jurgen Klopp side. It was almost so good, wasn't it? It was almost boring, the level of control that we had over the game. There was just no, you know, even with the goal that sort of got back, there was just absolutely no danger, really, of any sort of comeback of any kind. I think the main point, the main takeaway that I'm sort of holding on to is, you know, I think Prisk's, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, post-match interview, the Sparta Prague boss, where he was sort of saying, you know, look, this is a Champions League standard side in Liverpool. I think he sort of said, oh, Liverpool realistically are probably good enough to be in the semi-finals of a Champions League, this current iteration of the Champions League this season, which says a lot. It was a very, very classy post-match interview, plenty of praise. And I hope that he doesn't go home to the Czech Republic and get too much criticism from the sort of local press there. But, you know, I think just really a dominant display, a message really to the rest of the competition that, you know, Liverpool are taking this competition seriously. Even if we are a Champions League standard team, we do want to win the Europa League. Xabi Alonso has already talked about us already. He's not got us, he's got West Ham. But he's said that Liverpool are the favourites. And, you know, I think that's wouldn't be arrogant of us to admit.
Yeah, I think taking it seriously is a good point to make on that, because everyone was shocked by the strength of the team selection. There was a lot of people thinking that we'd see a lot more under-21s involved. But Klopp, when, you know, I think McAllister was rested, Diaz, Van Dijk, one or two others as well. But other than that, you know, it was a very strong team that was put out. And obviously Klopp will have his own reasons for that, maybe whether it's rhythm. And obviously there's a couple of players in there like Salah and Szoboszlai probably needed the minutes from the start of the game. But obviously it made things quite brutal for Sparta Prague. And I mean, one thing that struck me was got to the end of the game and they were sort of, all the Sparta Prague players were sort of there arm in arm by the away end, bouncing up and down with the supporters. And we often see that when there's a big mismatch and it's a team who kind of want to savour an occasion still a big, you know, away ground like Anfield. And taking it in despite the scoreline. But I think for them to sort of react in that way, their supporters, after conceding 11 goals over the two games, just shows that, you know, realistically they were resigned to what was going to happen, especially after the first leg, and just this feeling of kind of powerlessness at the quality that Liverpool had. And I think, in a way, you're spot on as well to say that, you know, the mismatch was so big that it was almost slightly boring, just because there was no jeopardy in the game. And to be fair, that happened in the first leg after, you know, with plenty of that game still to go. And it kind of felt like, I was trying to think of what a good comparison was, but Anyone who watches Formula One will know that Max Verstappen and Red Bull have won virtually every single race since probably the midpoint of 2022. And it was like watching like Max Verstappen and Red Bull yesterday, because their dominance at the moment means that it's like they're in a different category. And that's what it was like with Liverpool. And there was a point where George, the announcer at Anfield, who's obviously held that role for a long time, said, "Scorer of another Liverpool goal instead of Liverpool's fifth goal," when Szoboszlai scored. And I just thought, you know, I've never heard him say that before. And it's a little bit like, you know, it's a sign of how brutal it was. And I think on a similar note, Andy Robertson being used as a centre-back, I mean, something that I can't recall seeing before, and just a sign of like how far clear Liverpool were yesterday. So there's little stuff like that. And I don't think I've ever really truly felt sorry for an opponent Liverpool have played, but I came close to feeling sorry for those Sparta Prague players on the pitch yesterday, especially in those first 20 minutes or so. But yeah, I think obviously Liverpool putting down a bit of a marker there. But having said that, you know, they will face a much tougher test going forward in this competition if they are going to win it. We've just had the draw for the last eight, but before that, Farrell, before we touch on that, I mean, who was kind of the player who impressed you most yesterday? Again, when the margin between the two teams is so big, it's not one where kind of individuals can make too much of an impression, but obviously there was quite a few individual success stories still.
Oh, yeah, I'm kind of quite impressed with some of the young talent that we've got on the pitch. I thought Bobby Clark was great again. You know, certain numbers would back that up. I believe Conor Bradley really spoke him up sort of after the game, talking about, I think we talked about his goal as well. I've got the quote here, you know, yeah, great finish. And I thought Bobby played brilliantly. His pressing from the front was brilliant, and I'm buzzing for him. You know, goal and assist as well. 19 years of age. I mean, it's really the story of every single sort of academy player that sort of stepped up for Liverpool this season. Conor Bradley, Jaden Danz included. There was a debut, of course, for Mateusz Musiałowski, the Polish Messi. So this is, you know, after, what was that? There was a stat that came out. I think Musiałowski is what, the 90th player that Klopp's handed a debut to at Liverpool, you know, which is absolutely insane over like an 8-9 year period of his tenure since 2015. So I think, I'd probably give it to Bobby Clark, but you know, there's so many there that you could really give it to sort of on the day. You know, again, sort of Salah was instrumental. What was it, three assists as well as the goal? You know, you think that's looking quite promising when you're sort of heading into the weekend and facing United, and you're getting these players sort of fired up and energised, and you know, getting the sort of minutes in the legs, and you know, maybe too many minutes for Salah. I know Klopp was hoping to sort of get him off the pitch had it not been for Clark's slight concern. But yeah, I'm really impressed with Liverpool's young contingent.
Yeah, and on Salah as well, another sort of unprecedented feature from last night was when Klopp said in his interview that he basically told him not to defend in the second half, which I don't think, regardless of any scoreline in the past, you know, Klopp's ever told his players to almost stop pressing. Obviously, there's an element of kind of just using your intuition there, but the idea that Salah was just basically given a free pass when it came to the off-the-ball work just showed that, you know, it became basically all about, I think Klopp said, in a weird way, and it's a strange comment, obviously, but when it was when Liverpool had gone 4-0 up, and it was, what would it have been, about 9-1 on aggregate, became a bit of a tough game, just in the sense that you don't want to put yourself at risk at all, but you also obviously don't want to then let them score 2-3 goals and take a bit of the shine off the night. And it's just a matter of kind of getting through it in a professional manner after that, and fingers crossed that we'll avoid any injuries. I know Clark came off, so hopefully he's okay. The player I'd sort of pick out, I mean, you know, obviously a great moment for Clark, and the pressing was again very impressive from him. But I would say Nunez for that first 20 minutes or so of the match was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, the link-up play from him, really nice finish for his goal. There's a pass that he fires out to Salah, which is probably the best pass he's played in a Liverpool shirt. And I think as much as he did obviously miss a chance, quite a big chance to kind of get a second goal on the night and make it what would have been a fourth assist for Salah overall. You know, just he looks so much more polished than he did last season. And as much as it still, I don't think it's the finished article from him, I think the progress is clear to see, and the numbers are looking really positive for him as well. So I think he's enjoying probably his best run in a Liverpool shirt, just in terms of how kind of the fan base views him and how people outside Liverpool view him as well. But let's move on anyway to the quarterfinal draw, which has just happened only minutes before we came on, really. Liverpool facing Atalanta, home in the first leg, away in the second. Obviously played them in the Champions League a couple of years ago, but that was behind closed doors. They're sixth in Serie A, 4 points off the top four. They won their group with 14 points out of possible 18, ahead of Sporting, Sturm Graz and Rakow. I think is how you pronounce that, I'm not sure. Then actually had sort of the quirk of facing Sporting again in the last 16, where they won 3-2 on aggregate. I kind of put all the teams in the last eight into the Opta Power rankings. Basically, kind of tries to put every team in world football on the same statistical playing field and then work out, obviously, who's the best, who's the worst. And when you put the sort of seven possible opponents in, Atalanta come out as the third toughest behind Bayer Leverkusen, who are obviously going to be first there, and Milan. So I suppose when you look at that kind of interpretation of things, not the ideal draw for Liverpool, but I do think, Farrell, that it's one that you feel fairly confident about even still.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've had some good times against Atalanta in recent years, memory recalls. I don't know if I'm, I suppose I'm more thinking about sort of the total sort of pathway to Dublin and thinking, you know, realistically on the balance of things, we've got quite a nice pathway there. You know, it's when we're facing potentially the winner of Marseille, Benfica, I believe. If we beat Atalanta, we've been, I believe our group was section has been drawn as the potential home side for the final. I'm quietly sort of pleased with it. I think you still have to sort of go in and respect the opposition. And I think if you look at how sort of Jurgen Klopp approached the Sparta Praha sort of tie, you know, he's very clear even going into the game with the 5-1 up the fixture in Prague, that, you know, Liverpool would take the return tie very, very seriously. And indeed they did. We saw them absolutely blitz them within the opening 14 minutes to the point where they had to have a team meeting on the pitch to kind of recalibrate themselves. So I think, you know, I know people go, oh, well, you know, what if West Ham or some of this, but I'm personally quite pleased to you know, avoid West Ham at this stage. I would expect Leverkusen to go through, but of course you never know, it's European competition. I'm quietly pleased with it. How are you feeling?
Well, I was walking back from the stadium yesterday and I was sort of running through the teams in my head and I was like, obviously we don't want Leverkusen. They didn't want Milan either, because I think they're sort of, I think Inter are kind of running away with Serie A, but I think Milan are one of the teams just behind them, sort of second or third, if memory serves. And I didn't really want West Ham either, just because I don't love playing fellow English teams in Europe. And then Roma, obviously, we've just seen what they did to Brighton. They can be an awkward opponent. I think probably similar, you would say, for Marseille, who, to be fair, took a very impressive victory over Villarreal. I know they had a bit of a scare, but to beat them 4-0 in the first leg was impressive as well. And then Benfica, who Liverpool played a couple of years ago, maybe not the same level for them, obviously being in the Europa League rather than the Champions League. But again, that one has its jeopardy. So to me, I was kind of in my head like Atalanta probably would be the one that I would have picked out. But again, you know, there's still some obviously good teams standing in the way. The script writers are saying that it's going to be Liverpool v Bayer Leverkusen in the final. Obviously with the Klopp versus Alonso narrative there. So we'll see what happens. Leverkusen obviously only just about got through by the skin of their teeth as well. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. And just in terms of how it actually falls for Liverpool, they've got Atalanta either side of a game against Crystal Palace. So it's Atalanta on the 11th, Palace on the 14th, 2 o'clock kickoff at Anfield, and then the 18th for the return fixture. And beforehand, they play Manchester United before the first leg. But then there's obviously a break from sort of the Sunday to the Thursday there, and then it'll be a game against Fulham on the Sunday after, you would think, away from home. So fingers crossed Liverpool can obviously build up a decent first leg lead again, but obviously with last time they went to Bergamo, they won 5-0. I think Jota got a hat-trick in that game. But this time with fans present, it might be a bit more of an awkward one to navigate. Maybe some sort of cool heads required type scenario if Liverpool have a sort of lead of a couple of goals, because maybe the similarities to be drawn with the game against Villarreal in the Champions League in 2022, where Liverpool had a 2-0 lead, and then obviously things got away from them in the second leg. So obviously having that fixture at Anfield first isn't ideal, but I think aside from that, you've got to be really happy with how the draws panned out. And to be honest, Liverpool, I think even with Leverkusen in there, are clearly the best team in this competition. And it's basically up to them to decide whether they win it, because if they're on it, then I don't think anyone's going to be able to stop them. So yeah, a few weeks to go before that tie. But Liverpool still fighting on all fronts. Bit of off-field news this week as well. Significant one with Michael Edwards returning as FSG's CEO of football. He'll then appoint a new sporting director for Liverpool, and that is 99% expected to be Richard Hughes, who's just left Bournemouth. We'll talk about him a little bit more when that one gets confirmed. Those two will then work together on Liverpool's search for a new manager, whether that's Alonso or somebody else. Klopp says that he had some talks with Edwards about the position, but says that he didn't try and convince him to stay at the club beyond this season. Interestingly, one of the key points as well is that, you know, in terms of FSG, have made a couple of efforts to get Edwards back, and he was a bit resistant, but they're giving him this new role, and they've also said that they're going to let him kind of spearhead the search for a multi-club model for FSG, which is obviously a significant business move for the club. And he said that that was a key factor in agreeing to return. So obviously it's been a couple of days now since this was all confirmed. Finally, this is our sort of first chance to really get into it. Now that we've had a bit of time to digest the news, what do you think of it? Because it feels like a really big step for Liverpool in terms of forming their post-Klopp future.
Yeah, I don't know about you, mate, but I sort of, when I heard the news come through, I was like, oh my God, you know, they've managed to do it, because, you know, I think the interest was there, plenty of reports on it. But, you know, I was sort of thinking, you know, he kind of said he doesn't want to return in any kind of capacity as a sporting director. What kind of role are Liverpool offering him? You know, we sort of knew that, you know, FSG would have to move heaven and earth to sort of bring him back in any sort of capacity around Liverpool. And they have as CEO of football, I believe. But yeah, my predominant feeling was sort of one of, oh, you know, relief, I suppose, to a certain degree. Because I think the thing is, you look at the caliber of the figure in Jurgen Klopp, you know, leaving Liverpool this summer. The big question is can Liverpool maintain their sort of upward trajectory without that figurehead in place? And FSG on their part, I suppose, are thinking, well, how do we mitigate risk in this sort of scenario? And if by doing that, if you can't get a manager who is of an immediate sort of caliber comparable to Klopp, what you do is ensure that everything behind the scenes is working perfectly. The one man that sort of guarantees that to a degree is Michael Edwards. You know, we've seen this before, and I think, you know, Klopp obviously spoke glowingly in his the same press conference. Bruce, you know, sort of also admitted that, you know, look, I'm not staying just because he's he's coming back. So it does mitigate risk massively for Liverpool. I think as well, what's interesting, and it's part of the reason, a significant part of the reason, obviously, why he is committing to this role, this return with FSG, is because there is scope for progression. Obviously, the immediate priority will be sorting a sporting director, sorting the backroom staff that would accompany, you know, any manager that does come in to replace Jurgen Klopp. But beyond that, of course, as a CEO of football, his task will be to help acquire and identify another football club to bring into the FSG stable, which is massive, really. It's a massive change of direction from Liverpool. We obviously knew that Liverpool and FSG specifically were sniffing around this concept very recently, prior to you know, contemplating selling the club. Brazil was discussed as a destination. I believe Cruzeiro, who obviously now owned by the original Ronaldo, was considered as a potential point of investment. And I think Liverpool has sort of acknowledged where sides like particularly Manchester City with their model are doing well, that obviously I believe the expectation is that any model Liverpool create will more closely resemble Brighton's model than Manchester City's sort of globally sort of spanning banner under the City Football Group. So I'm just to get back to your question, I'm quite excited to see what direction sort of Liverpool go down. I think the important thing is if you can't necessarily guarantee what manager you're going to bring in for the doors, make sure that everything behind the scenes is in tip-top shape. And I think that's what really Fenway have done.
Yeah, I think it's a huge coup to bring him back. I mean, just to start on the multi-club stuff, I think it's not something that I think is going to be hugely welcomed by some Liverpool fans, just in the sense that it's kind of a little bit of a symptom of where football's heading, and just kind of this sort of hyper capitalist situation where you've got kind of these giant clubs maybe acquiring, you know, smaller teams overseas and things like that. And I think that isn't sort of a side of the game that a lot of Liverpool fans in particular embrace. So, you know, I can see why it wouldn't sit right with some. I suppose the counter argument to that is Liverpool are where they are within the game. This is clearly the way that it's going for a lot of the top teams. It kind of feels like it's going to be a key part of what the future looks like in the game. And a lot of people would say Liverpool can't allow themselves to be left behind already to a degree. City are obviously leading the way in this area. They've sort of blazed that trail. Their model is going to be a lot more sophisticated than their rivals are. So Liverpool will already be playing catch up there. But obviously we've seen Chelsea as well have basically bought Strasbourg, or their owners have. Brighton, like you mentioned, have got Union SG, or Liverpool played in the Europa League group stages, obviously. So yeah, maybe we will see kind of more of that just relationship with one, two, three teams, however many it is, where players are kind of going on loan and then coming back, rather than kind of a Liverpool football group or anything along those lines. So I think there's a debate to be had there about whether that model is a good thing or not, but maybe less of a debate about whether Liverpool actually need it based on what the game's going to look like in 10, 15 years' time. So we'll see what approach they take there, whereabouts they look for that club. Because, you know, with City, I think everyone thinks about Girona as kind of the main one, especially with the prominence they've had in Spain this season. But they've got teams in Japan, in India, in Brazil as well. So it's kind of a global network for them. So we'll see how that one pans out. And then just on Edwards, and we'll see kind of how the specifics of this role take shape. I think one thing that makes this especially exciting is the fact that since he's left, there's been a lot of noise about teams like Chelsea and Manchester United, who we know have been, you know, just a picture of dysfunction in recent years, trying to get him and been unsuccessful in doing that. So it's sort of like almost winning a transfer battle, except for an off-field appointment, and it's for someone who is so sought after and coveted. Because I don't think there's any sporting director or sort of behind-the-scenes figure in world football who is better than Michael Edwards at the job. And there might be somewhere on the same level, but I think what we saw from Edwards, obviously in conjunction with Klopp, and he's not going to be able to make Liverpool a force on his own. He's going to have to get the managerial appointment right. But in terms of that sort of player recruitment side of things, I think he's probably the best in the business. And that's why those other clubs made an attempt to get him. So it's almost a double victory in the sense that he comes back to Liverpool and he can hopefully be the man who's kind of given the keys to the club's future in that regard. But also to keep him at the hands of their rivals as well, because it would have been a bit ominous if he'd been given the kind of resources that Chelsea and Manchester United have been given their managers in the past. So I think it is obviously really good news for Liverpool, and we'll see what happens next in terms of the sporting director appointment with Richard Hughes likely coming in, and then what happens with the manager and whether there's a sort of a new structure that takes shape post-Klopp, because it is going to be obviously quite a significant reset, both culturally and in terms of kind of the hierarchy as well. So just to finish then, Farrell, we will talk briefly about Sunday's FA Cup tie against Manchester United. Liverpool looking to keep that quadruple push going into what will effectively be April, with the international break coming up, by winning at Old Trafford and then setting up a game at Wembley, the first of a couple of meetings with Manchester United in a few weeks. How confident do you feel for this one? Because we've seen in the past when Liverpool have been in really good form, onto Old Trafford and struggled. We saw earlier in the season, a lot of people were saying Liverpool were going to batter Man United and ended up goalless. And going away from home there is never easy, regardless of the gulf between the two teams. And obviously the dynamics of it being a cup tie make a slightly difference as well. So what are your sort of thoughts on that one heading into it on Sunday?
You know, I don't think it will be the kind of scoreline that we saw against Sparta Praha, but it might come back to bite me, but I'm feeling reasonably confident going into Old Trafford. I certainly think, you know, the one major benefit of playing in Europe, sort of second tier, is that we have been able to field, you know, a mixed side, as it were, put faith in players like Conor Bradley, Bobby Clark, and the like, you know, Jaden Danz as well. We have been able to mix and match, and as you said, sort of play Robertson even a centre back. So we've been able to rest players going into this. I know Klopp was like, oh yeah, it's another game in 3 days, but realistically, you sort of think, you know, taking your foot off the wheel for the most part against Sparta, it really should benefit you heading into Old Trafford. We've got Konate potentially back as well, I believe. The injury, thankfully, wasn't that serious in the first leg. Everyone's sort of fit and firing, you know, Luis Diaz, Darwin Nunez, Mohamed Salah. I'm wary in the sense of, you know, it's Old Trafford, it's United. You always have to certainly expect that they'll try to raise their game against us or frustrate us, certainly. But obviously it's a cup competition, so, you know, they've got to be careful about sort of how conservative they are at home against us. You know, they're still going to make some kind of effort. So I do think it's a sort of very different circumstance to a sort of bog standard league game. And I think that suits us quite nicely, to be honest. I'm reasonably confident, and I'm going to hold on to that feeling. How about yourself?
I would say the same, to be honest. I don't know if it's confidence or just feeling more relaxed than usual heading into this game, because if the league table looks broadly like what it does now, when Liverpool go to Old Trafford in the league, and just looking at when the fixtures actually fall, yeah, they've got Brighton at home and then Sheffield United at home between the two games against United. So the odds are it's still going to be pretty much the same situation at the top. It will take a couple of points here or there. I think I'll feel probably physically sick going into that game. You know, Old Trafford away, title race, etc. You know, it's all kind of set up, the narrative there. And I think for United, now that they've obviously been beaten twice by Man City, and it looks like they're probably not going to finish in the top five, I do wonder if the biggest thing they can salvage from their Premier League season is going to be almost stopping Liverpool to a degree. But so I think the dynamics are very different. I always feel just a little bit less kind of pressure for a cup tie and maybe a little bit more excitement. And I am kind of looking forward to this in a bit of a strange way, which I never would normally say going to Old Trafford. But I do think Liverpool have got a very good chance to come away with, obviously, any win at Old Trafford, regardless of whether United are struggling or not. It's kind of a very memorable result. I think Liverpool have got a great chance to go and do that, especially with things, touch wood, looking up a little bit on the injury front as well. And one other thing I'd say is that I think the allocation for Liverpool fans is about 9,000 or something going into this game, because obviously it's much more significant for cup ties. So I think that's going to have a bit of a bearing on the dynamics as well, just rather than being the small pocket in the corner. The Liverpool fans are going to be making a lot of noise within this match, and I think that's going to affect the dynamics of the game slightly as well. So, yeah, I'm feeling much more relaxed about it, like I say, than I normally would for this particular fixture. It's going to be very different in the league, but I think, obviously, if you said to a lot of Liverpool fans, which game would you rather win, they would choose the Premier League match in a couple of weeks' time, but they've definitely got what it takes to win both of them if they perform. But as we've seen in the past, often they get dragged down to the level of United within these games. So we'll see how that one goes, and we'll see if Liverpool do get through, who they end up facing in the semi-finals, with City still in there, Chelsea in there again, and Wolves as well. So let's see how that one goes. But yeah, we'll leave it there. It's obviously been a busy podcast with plenty to get through, but we're almost coming up to international break now. After that game against Man United, so a little bit of a break from the relentless nature of the schedule. We'll still have content coming for you as well. But yeah, make sure you join us for our United match reaction. That one will probably be landing on Monday, so keep your eyes peeled for that. In the meantime, thanks, Farrell, for joining me. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening, and take care.